must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Will Braden, curator of Cat Video Fest, slated to screen at the Tampa Theater on the evenings of August 23rd and 25th through 27th. Cat Video Fest constitutes probable paradise for those who enjoy watching cat videos. And for those who relish scrolling from one feline flick to another and another, Cat Video Fest will arrive as a gigantic gift. It's a 75-minute compilation of the newest, best, and brightest of cat videos, edited into a briskly paced reel, divided into loose categories such as drama, action, adventure, cat gifs, documentary, musical, and so on. These clips are selected from hours of submissions, with the selecting done by Braden, who has an important history with the festival. More than a decade ago, he shook up the scene with a series of videos featuring his mom's French-speaking cat, Henry, Henri, went viral. Braden began running Cat Video Fest in 2016. Cat Video Fest is now presented in over 200 cities across the country, teaming with independent theaters. And a portion of the proceeds from each engagement go to a local animal shelter. In this case, it's the Humane Society of Tampa Bay. We'll discuss various aspects of Cat Video Fest when I speak with Will Braden in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. First, though, a programming note. In just under 2 weeks, on September 3rd, WMNF's Fall Fun Drive begins, and I'll be raising money here on Talking Animals on the very next day, Wednesday, September 4th. Typically assigned a giant fundraising goal, especially for a one-hour show, and this drive is no exception. $3,000 in an hour. Yikes. I've learned over the years that the only real prospect of reaching that kind of goal in that length of time, a shorter time, is to receive pledges before the fun drive show. So I'm hoping you might consider donating, ideally before September 4th. Would you consider doing it today, in fact? Any amount, $35, $50, or if you can swing more, $100 or more, would be greatly appreciated, whatever you can swing. Please visit WMNF.org, and in the upper right-hand corner, click on Donate Now on the secure donation form that opens up towards the bottom, labeled Designate to Pick a Show. There's a drop-down menu with options for where to direct your donation. Please select TLA, Talking Animals, so that our show is credited with your donation. Thank you very much for anything you can do to help give us a running start here. Meanwhile, coming up later in today's program, I'll speak with Jen Heckner of Dog Moms of Tampa Bay, a group of Yes Moms who hold regular dog-oriented meetups across Tampa Bay. There's often a charitable or fundraising element to these events. Their next gathering is the Pups and Plants Workshop, happening this Saturday, August 24th, at Wild Roots in St. Pete. You'll learn about pet-safe plants and more. Indeed, we'll hear more about the workshop as well as other details about Dog Moms of Tampa. We'll talk with Jim Heckner a bit later in today's show. Right now, though, let's discuss the cats, the videos, and more to the point, Cat Video Fest screening August 23rd and 25th through 27th at the Tampa Theater with its curator, Will Braden. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing DJ at WMNF.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Will Braden to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Will.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm purring so loudly.
Wow. Well, that's great. I guess that's only fitting, all things considered. So, yeah. So I think it's safe to say you have a singular way of making a living. Your job is basically, as I understand it, watching cat videos most of each day.
It is. And the second question I always get is this your full-time job?
Well, we're going to get into that because I want to get into the particulars of the job in a few minutes. But I'd first like to find out a bit about you and your background, just to see if we might trace the career path that led you to what's obviously a kind of a rarefied position that you occupy today. So when did you first become affected by film in any form?
I was always fascinated by film and by movies. I majored in creative writing, and I thought that I wanted to do screenwriting, but I spent some time in Europe, got a little sidetracked, and eventually I went to film school here in Seattle, where I'm from, at the Seattle Film Institute. And that's where I first did an Henri project. I had an assignment to do a profile of someone, and I had procrastinated, and I didn't have enough time to find a someone. I was house sitting for my mom, and so I did a profile of her cat, and I made it sort of a parody of French and Spanish New Wave films. And I figured if I did made it funny enough, they wouldn't notice that I didn't really follow the assignment, and it worked. And I got an A, and I was hooked on cat videos from then on. So that was 2006, and in 2012, one of the honoree videos won the Golden Kitty Award at the first cat video festival. This is in Minneapolis. And I from then on, I was full-time cat videos. So
wow.
It's been well over a decade now that my job is just to watch and edit and make and curate cat videos.
All right. Well, you've encapsulated about 30, 35 minutes of our conversation into a minute and a half. So
I'm too good at this.
No, that's great. But we'll definitely expand on some of that. I kind of want to go back to first just being interested in film because
sure.
Was there something that kind of like just grabbed you, that you found sort of fascinating about film? I mean, not just enjoying it or finding it, well, this mystery is really gripping or whatever, but something you found that you felt like, hey, I'm really spending a lot of time thinking about film or analyzing this film. Or another film, and having a conversation with yourself, like, hey, is there any way I could maybe do this? Could I make a film?
Sure. Yeah, it's a good question because, I mean, I grew up in the 80s in the sort of the heyday of big sort of spectacle movies, and I grew up, you know, watching Star Wars and, you know, Spielberg movies and a lot of fun things like that. And I loved those things. I gravitated towards them. But I found from early on that I was interested in the structure of movies, too. And when I started to learn more about writing and sort of the progression of stories and the three-act structure of movies, I was drawn to that because I also really like puzzles. I like crossword puzzles and puzzles. And I like this idea that there is a solvable, correct way to sort of tell a story, which you can change and you can change the rules and everything, obviously. But the idea that there's a universality to stories and movies is just another way to tell a story, I was always drawn to that. And so I don't know how that morphed into cats, but that was my first real sort of love of movies, was the idea that they were piecing something together. And that's why my favorite genre of movies is still heist movies or escaping from a prison or something. I like the kind of movies where someone is solving a puzzle.
Right, because then there's two puzzles, at least. There's how the film was written and directed and pieced together, and then there's the on-screen puzzle that the film is actually about. So it's probably got you on a couple levels right off the bat.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But movies, even movies that seem to be really sort of slick in Hollywood, like Ocean's 11, those came right around the time for me when I was just getting ready to go to film school, where I just loved the process. And I was the perfect generation where we got access to director and producer and actor commentary on DVDs.
Mm.
So when I was in college and afterwards in grad school, certain directors wouldn't do it, and I respect that, but certain directors I love, like David Fincher and Steven Soderbergh, they would do very in-depth commentary on DVDs, so you could hear all about sort of how things were pieced together, things that didn't work, and why they chose certain shot selection, and I was fascinated by that. Some of my friends were like, I don't really want to hear the behind the scenes because it takes away my immersion from the film, but I never felt like that at all. I always just felt like it enhanced it the more I knew.
Yeah, for them it's kind of like the magician telling how they did the trick, but for you it was
exactly.
more just like, okay, here's how the puzzle in this case worked, and this is how it was solved.
Exactly, yeah. I wanted to know how it was set out and how they solved the puzzle even before, you know, anything we saw on screen. It was just the process of creating it and executing it.
So when you went to film school, did that kind of just underscore your fascination with the, sounds like really it's a lot of it for you is structure.
Yeah.
And was that emphasized in the film school that you went to, or is that just something you were already drawn to and it just kind of added to your relish of seeing how films are put together when you know?
It was. I was lucky enough to be in film school at the tail end of still learning about film. I mean, actual film, shooting on 16mm and 8mm. And so because of that, there was a lot more preparation involved at the beginning when we were making student films.
Yeah.
You couldn't just shoot and shoot and shoot on digital and then figure it out later. We had to, I mean, film was precious.
Yeah, and expensive. Project, yeah.
Expensive, yeah. And our first projects were MOS projects, which means no dialogue. And so you had to figure out how to structure something and tell a story without a lot of the usual tricks that you were used to. And so
it was basically like a silent film, or
kind of, yeah. MLS means mit ohne Sprache, which is German for without talking, and it basically just means you're supposed to be focusing on developing the film and cuts and edits and angles of shots. So they want to take away your reliance on dialogue to tell the story so that you focus on more of the technical aspects. What I think a lot of people in my class did was still try to just do these projects that they wanted to do and take out the dialogue, and then it was either confusing or it didn't work. And I just immediately started thinking, okay, well, where is there no dialogue? And I thought, you know, Looney Tunes or... you know, early, you know, Buster Keaton and stuff like that. And so I just decided to start making, you know, really sort of kinetic, sort of silly, action-oriented things that were all funny. And it really, really tickled me from the beginning. I just thought, oh, this is great. And without having to rely on the dialogue, I was able to think, okay, well, what is this going to look like in the end? And how, you know, thinking about which shots I was going to do to sort of set up punchlines of physical gags and stuff like that. And I found that to be so much fun. And then later on, in you know, a year later, when we're doing, you know, real dialogue-driven pieces, I still wanted to go back to that. My final piece in film school was, I think it had maybe three lines in it, and it was just about a kid whose mom works at the aquarium here in Seattle, who was like running around doing all this stuff. And it was still almost like a cartoon. Just, I just always thought the best stories are told where you just, it's all up there on the screen and no one has to interpret anything. That's just for me, for what I find funny.
Yeah. Well, that may, to some people, foreshadow a little bit later the cat video realm. But let me ask you, are you glad you went to film school? Because a lot of people, I think, feel they are glad and they learn a lot. And some people feel like, I could have gotten a lot of this just on my own making films, which I was already doing before I went to film school. So where do you land on this?
Right in the middle. I'm very glad I went. I love the Seattle Film Institute. I had a lot of great experiences there. And there's a lot of things that I use daily and certainly use editing the reel that I rely on. On the other hand, I thought of it at the time as this sort of jumping a springboard to going to L.A., and after I got done with film school, I moved to L.A., and I just hated it. I hated it. I had a lot of work right away, not necessarily, like, amazing stuff, but there's no shortage of work if you want to work hard and you're, you know, willing to do whatever. I didn't like the culture of it. And so immediately I was thinking, oh, boy, have I made a big mistake with what I want to do here. But then I came back to Seattle and started doing different kinds of projects and doing a lot of videography and, you know, even just wedding videos. But also I worked a lot with local nonprofits doing sort of commercial videos and, you know, telling stories just quickly and visually like that in small mediums, local commercials. And I found that fun as well. So, I'm glad that I went. But I definitely do. I do sympathize with people who think that college in general or any kind of advanced study. I mean, there's always going to be people who say you can get away without it. But really, it's just a matter of your expectations. If your expectations of any kind of schooling are, as soon as I'm done with the schooling, I've got it made, then you're going to be disappointed. But if you think I'm going to enjoy this and I'm going to have all these tools in my belt, and then we'll see what happens, then I think it can definitely be worth it.
Yeah. Well, it also sounds like for you, L.A. in various ways was not a good fit, regardless of your training and having been to film school. Just, you know, like you say, there was plenty of opportunities for work and stuff with someone with your background and training. But it sounds like more of a culture clash maybe for you.
It was a lot of things. I mean, I just remember like being there for 3 or 4 days and my car was so dirty and I was just like, why are there? And then now I realize why there's a car wash on every corner. Because it's just, you'd just be driving around and then it looked like you've been doing donuts in a dust basin or something. Because I'm from Seattle. I probably went years without washing my car because it would rain every third day and you didn't have to worry about it.
Right.
But also just, you're right. It was just every person you meet in L.A., is thinking, how can I show off what I'm doing and how can I see if this person can help me get another leg up? And some people are okay playing that game, and it's fun, and they find the creative aspect worth the sort of odd interpersonal relationships, but
yeah.
I couldn't get past it. I felt like every conversation I had was transactional, and it made me feel really isolated and weird. So, yeah, it wasn't for me. I like visiting LA a lot. I have friends there, but it's just not for me in general. I'm a Seattle guy.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. And also, I think probably partly what you're up against there is there was a ton of people who moved to L.A. in the way that you initially moved to L.A. So a lot of people with kind of big hopes and dreams that they'd pinned on their move. So it probably was very transactional, like, hey, I'm here to make films, or I'm here to get a gig or whatever. So that's what I want to talk about here, whether it's with Will or with the next guy.
Yeah. And I never was going there going, I'm going to be the next Martin Scorsese. I just thought this is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's the next step. Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And as soon as I was there, I thought, okay, well, maybe this isn't what I'm. So I'm thankful that I didn't just stay there for the sake of doing it.
Well, before we get into more Cat Realm, let me ask you this. Is there any sort of Will Braden film on the horizon, a new offering of some kind that you've been working on?
No, I mean, the Cavity Offense is my full-time gig. Every once in a while, I have ideas in my head of, well, maybe I could do this or that. But I get enough of the juices flowing creatively for me, putting together the reel, putting together the trailer each year, and working on other things that are kind of different muscles that I never had before, and doing graphic design, and I do all the music for the Cavity Fest as well, so I get to do a lot of creative stuff that way. I do want to someday do like a documentary just on something cat related. I think it would be fun to just like go around the country just meeting a lot of the people whose videos that I've used in the past, but there's some people where I've had relationships with them for 6-7 years of putting videos and sharing content, and I've never met them in person. So there's things like that that I always think about. Yeah, someday, you know.
Sure. But right now, you sound like you're content and you're satisfied because there's so many things that draws on your abilities and your talents when you're just putting together the latest version of Cat Video Fest.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very fulfilling.
Yeah. So when did cats enter your picture? I mean, like, when or how did you become a cat guy? I assume cat guy status is partly at least required for the gig.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and people often ask, like, do you have an antagonism towards dogs because you work with cats so much? I love dogs. I'm just too lazy to have a dog. You got to get up early and walk them and make sure you're home on time. And cats are a little less work in that realm. But I grew up with cats and dogs. I got to pick out two cats from a local shelter when I was, I think, 8 or 9. And yeah, I don't remember a time where I didn't have a cat in my life.
How many cats live with you currently?
Only one.
Okay, so you're one at a time guy, it sounds like.
Well, I have had more once. My now wife, then girlfriend, when we moved in together, she had a cat, so we had two for a bit, but that cat since passed. So we have one now, and my wife is very kitten crazy right now. She really wants another one, and I think that my cat, Nin, who's an elderly lady cat, would be fine with it. And she goes, no, 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 no. She wouldn't be fine with it. So we'll see how long she can wait before we get a second one.
All right.
But yeah, I was always into cats. There was a picture of me, and I must have been about 7 or 8, doing a school project about cats. I'm pointing to a little whiteboard with all this information about cats, like I'm a cat scientist.
Okay.
And it's my favorite picture of me is from childhood, because I think, look, I got the receipt. If anybody questions, really, you just watch cat videos for a living? I can say, look.
Look how far back this goes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. Well, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Will Braden, curator of Cat Video Fest 2024, slated to screen at the Tampa Theater on August 23rd, and then again the 25th through the 27th. Cat Video Fest is a compilation of the newest sort of best and brightest of cat videos, edited by Will into a bristly pace 75-minute bonanza. And if you have questions for Will, who selects all the cat videos that end up at Cat Video Fest, as we're hearing, or just like to offer a comment about cats, cat videos, whatever, please call 813-239-9663, email dj at wnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So it looks like we have a caller that might want to get involved in the conversation. Let's get them involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Will Braden of Cat Video Fest.
Hi, Hey, first of all, thank you as always, Duncan, for having verified the world's best animal-centered show in any media. So you are the man.
Well, I guess you've done global research to assign me that kind of...
I've looked at every animal-related show in every language from every universe. And the Duncan Talking Animals show, I mean, just the theme song itself is, you know, beyond everybody else.
Well, that we must quickly credit to Rebecca Pulley, the local amazing singer-songwriter.
I was enjoying that earlier.
Yeah, I love those sounds, and sometimes when I'm super high, I'll go around going, dog, burk, 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 and people look at me and think they're going to call for a mental health check. But here's something that'll be very controversial, and it's almost like a philosophical religious thing, but my belief is that, especially when Shady Vance called out women who love cats, the childless cat ladies, I see a kind of cultural, anthropological difference between people who love dogs but hate cats and people who love cats but don't like dogs. And I think the difference is that although cats are terrible predators for native wildlife like birds, they can't be trained to be aggressive proximity invaders. They can't be used by racist police officers to attack black people in Selma. They can't be used to sniff drugs. Rarely, if ever, in fact, I don't think I've ever heard of a cat killing a baby. But you hear all of that with dogs. And I noticed that with a certain percentage of dog owners, entitlement and narcissism that goes way beyond the dog park and extends to off-leash dogs on the beaches chasing native birds. With cats, you have a more peaceful, introverted, sensitive animal that isn't aggressive and can't really be made, fatally aggressive. So, especially since Shady Vance, you know, criticized people who love cats, and dogs have been historically used in war and as aggressive proximity guardians. I'd like you to comment on that if you feel safe doing so, knowing that there's millions of dog lovers who listen to this show.
Wow, that's quite a question and quite a preamble to it. I like it. So that's plenty to chew on. So, Will, feel free to answer in any way that you'd like.
Yeah, well, I'll say a few things. One is... yeah, the cats are really the only domesticated animal that domesticated themselves. So you have a point there that they just decided they wanted to hang out with us because it was easier for them, not because we trained them to do things for us. So I do think that is a fundamental difference in the domestication and sort of what the history of domesticated, cats versus dogs is. I don't want to touch necessarily the anthropological idea of cat people versus dog people, because I think the lion's share of people like dogs and cats. They might just have a preference one way or another. But I will say that two things. One is the big part of why cats were on the internet is because of one of the things that the caller mentioned, which is that there really isn't like cat parks. There aren't take your cats to work days.
Yeah.
You know, people don't generally walk around with cats on leashes, although it happens sometimes. So the internet became the de facto place for that. And so the introversion aspect of it is absolutely true. And that's why Cat Video Fest is so fun, because it's taking that aspect of the online culture and taking it offline, giving people a safe space to just meet all together and share cat photos and also have something to watch. The J.D. Vance thing is funny because the timing of it was so serendipitous. It was such a stupid comment. It was so ill-informed, and it was so sort of antiquated. I mean, he's talking about stereotypes about cat ladies that are just like 15 years old at this point. We've kind of moved beyond that. And it was not just ill-informed, but politically, you know, ignorant of him to just make fun of all of these cat people that are legion online without thinking, of course, they're going to get ticked off and of course they're going to come for him. And the idea that anybody liking anything should just be an object of derision is a silly idea, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And he made those comments, and there was this huge swelling of, you know, hashtag cat lady summer and all this stuff right before we had our opening weekend. And so we were offering people like, hey, look, if you want to celebrate cats and stick it to the people that make fun of cat culture and cat ladies, then here is an opportunity to raise money for some local shelters and have fun and do all that at the same time. So, you know, I'd be lying if I said that J.D. Vance's stupid comments didn't raise a lot of money for cats.
Yeah, no, that's a plus I hadn't even considered. Yeah.
Yeah, so good for him. Keep saying stupid things, J.D. Vance.
All right. So let's delve a little further into Cat Video Fest. But before we do, just because we touched on this a little bit so far, one of our emailers said, with the subject line, Henri II, one of the greatest short films of all time, an instant classic. Thanks for this interview. So that's super nice.
That's very nice. Yeah, Roger Ebert declared it the best cat video ever made. And that was, at the time, I was just like, that was amazing to me. That was the best thing that ever happened to me. I've since gotten married and have a son, so I guess I can't say anymore that it was the best thing. But at the time, Roger Ebert watching my little short film and saying it was the best was pretty exciting. So
yeah, that's heady stuff for sure.
Yeah.
So you can still relish it in the filmmaking cat video realm, even if you now are married and have a kid. So
yeah.
It's a different category. So exactly. Let's talk more about Cat Video Fest itself. Can you give us a little bit of overview of history? Like, how did it begin and when and where exactly?
Yeah, in 2012, at the Walker Arts Center in Minneapolis, Scott Stuhlen and Katie Hill, they were curators at the museum, and they had a program called Open Field out there. The Walker Arts Center has a huge field out in front that sort of kind of makes a natural amphitheater, and they would do big projects out there. They were watching cat videos instead of doing their work, which as we all do, and then they thought, wait a minute, we're museum curators. We can actually put on a festival or something with cat videos, and they thought that it would just be a fun little thing, and then it just snowballed, and 11,000 people showed up, and they had all this press, and it was just huge. And I had submitted one of the Henri videos there, and it turned out it was one of the finalists for the Golden Kitty Award, which was the audience choice award there. And so before I knew anything about, you know, whether I was going to win it or not, I just booked a flight up there because I said, I'm not missing the first, you know, Internet Cat Video Festival. And I won and got to go up on stage in front of all these people. And I said, you know, can I say something? And they said, sure. And so I went up there and I said, thank you so much. And I'll be back next year with another Henri video. And there was huge cheers. And I got off the stage and Scott said, well, I guess we're doing this again next year, Will. You just told 11,000 people and 30 media outlets that we're doing it. So I sunk my claws in really quickly. I thought, this is too much fun. So I began bit by bit to start working more with it. I began curating the reel for Walker. And then in 2015, they stepped away to do other projects. So from 2016 onward, I took over both curating the reel and then the behind-the-scenes scheduling and business stuff. So that was the history. And then in 2019, I started to partner with Oscilloscope, who does our theatrical distribution. And they're a really special kind of theatrical distribution company, a film distribution company, that really only works on things that they like, that tell amazing stories, that work with directors that are people of color and people in the LGBTQ community and from other countries, or, you know, movies that might not get distribution because they have odd subject matter or things like that. And so it was a perfect marriage from the beginning. And so now we're in our sixth year with that partnership, and
did it go national or maybe more broadly national at that point once you teamed with them?
I mean, we basically, they just supercharged what I'd been trying to do meekly on my own, which was sort of contacting theaters, and they had all the relationships in place, whereas I was trying to just contact theaters that I liked and knew in different places, and would try to go, okay, hear me out, it's cat videos. And it was just, I had to sort of start from scratch every single time.
Yeah.
They had the networking to do it. And so, yeah, it supercharged it. But the good thing about Cat Video Fest is if you just get it in front of people, it always works. Everyone is always happy. It always raises money. It's G-rated. It's for everybody. So all it is just convincing as many theaters as possible to show it and making sure that every show has a beneficiary in a local shelter or a local animal welfare organization. And as long as those two things are met, then it can kind of play anywhere and work anywhere.
So
yeah. Well, a couple things about what you just said there. How did you determine, or maybe it was part of the partnership, about what kind of theaters? Because there are obviously very specific kind of theaters where Cat Video Fest screens. So was that a specific kind of strategy of saying, we really want to kind of reach out to these kind of theaters, and that's who should present Cat Video Fest?
Well, sort of. I mean, there's a sweet spot of, like, the kind of theater that it really works at. It works well. The Tampa Theater is a good example. Theaters that are big and have kind of a great history, but also have just this built-in audience of people that go, I trust this theater to program things that are interesting and unusual. I might not even be a cat person. I'm an aficionado of this theater. And then There's cat people who say, I'll go see this wherever you're playing it in my town. I don't care what theater it is. But then they'll go to see places like the Music Box in Chicago or the Enzian and the Tampa Theater, where it's just amazingly beautiful as a theater, and then they get hooked on that too. So it's kind of a combination of all of the things. Yes, it can just play in like an average sort of multiplex theater, but it does the best in communities and areas where the theater is really part of the community and people are just on board with unusual programming and fun things to begin with.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, it's
that makes sense.
Kind of specific to that.
Yeah, I like the notion of, hey, in this case, at the Tampa Theater, they always have great stuff. I'm not even sure what Cat Video Fest is, although I can kind of figure it out a little bit by the name. But the fact that the Tampa Theater is presenting it means it's got a stamp of approval that is enough for me, and exactly. I'm going to go.
Yeah, exactly. It's a pedigree. And, I mean, it's hard to find a more beautiful theater in the nation than Tampa Theater. I mean, it's like something built, you know, like in a castle or something. It's just so amazing. And so there is something funny to me about watching something so, you know, earnestly silly, like Cat Video Fest, in such a beautiful, historic...
kind of regal surroundings, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's part of the fun of it. That, you know, it's like if somebody slips and falls in a puddle, it's funnier if they're wearing a tuxedo, you know?
For sure. So do you go to a lot of the theaters that are presenters of Cat Video Fest then? Obviously, you've been to Tampa Theater for sure.
Yeah, I've been there, I think, only once. I used to go more, but when it was more necessary for me to kind of present the reel, to sort of explain what was going on. And as time has gone on, I mean, we've been at the Tampa Theater now for a few years, and people know what it is now, so I'm not as necessary to it. So really, I go to shows that I can get to quickly around here. I go to the shows in Seattle, obviously. But a lot of them kind of run on autopilot, and I'm happy with that. I trust the theaters to do on their own what they want to do. Tampa Theater, for example, has cats for adoption, which is great. Some theaters can't do that, but they have the mechanism to do that. Some theaters make it into a big production of things, and some theaters just go, we don't have the room for this, or you know, we got too many people with allergies that work here.
Yeah, but that's a great sort of built-in feature that we've alluded to, but let's mention again that everywhere the Cat Video Fest screens, there's an element where a local rescue receives a portion of the proceeds from those screenings. So in this case, again, it's the Humane Society of Tampa Bay. But when did that idea kind of first come up? Who presented that idea? Because it's obviously just yet another great element of something that's already kind of pretty cool to begin with.
It was part of the DNA to begin with. But when I took it over, I made it absolutely a necessity. We've literally never done a show that doesn't have a local beneficiary.
That's great.
And as Cat Video Fest has grown, it really wouldn't be a lot easier for us at the end of the year to be able to just write one check to the ASPCA or something like that.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't work as well because these are community events. And
people have a stake in it.
We trust the community just in the way that theater knows how to present it. We trust that the local shelters know what cats need the most, and what's needed in Tampa is not the same as what's needed in Chicago. Sometimes, you know, this trap, neuter, release is more needed. Sometimes it's just desperate need for fostering. Sometimes, you know, feral cats. And so every place is different. And being able to partner with a local shelter means that we're even more connected to the community. And it also means that I can be even more hands-off
Once the event sort of takes on a life of its own, I just back away from it and say, look, I'm presenting the real. You have 75 minutes of entertainment, and everything beyond that, I'm not precious about the context. If people want to, if you want to have a cat face painting contest or a costume contest, or you want to have a mobile adoption truck out front, I mean, people can do anything
they
want
with it. Yeah. No, that's so great. So again, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Will Braden, curator of Cat Video Fest 2024, screening at the Tampa Theater on August 23rd, and then again 25th through 27th. It's a wonderfully curated collection of cat videos, and a portion of the proceeds, as we just noted, from these screenings go to the Humane Society of Tampa Bay. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask Will a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj at wnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So I'm going to get into a curating question or two in a sec, but I want to read another email that came in. And the subject line says, incredible true story for cat lovers. And then it says, it's called the, please mention on air this incredible movie, it's called The Electrical Life of Lewis Wayne. It was a British man who was largely responsible for changing people's minds from viewing cats as vermin to viewing them as cherished pets. So that's from our email.
I have seen it, and I have actually seen a collection of art by him in person. It's very, very important guy in the history of cat culture. So.
No, that's great. We're covering all kinds of ground here today, Will, so that's excellent.
Exactly.
But let's get back to the subject at hand. So when you click, somebody submits a video to you, and when you click on it, what are you looking for? Or I know it probably shifts around, but is there an informal criteria? Or is it more like, hey, I know a good cat video at this point when I see it, and I can't really describe necessarily what the criteria is?
It's a little of both. There are beginning parameters that I run into, which is the first one being length. If I see a really amazing short film that someone's made, but it's like 9 minutes long, unless they're willing to let me edit it down, I can't put it in the reel. It's just too long, because we only have 75 minutes. And so the length is my first consideration.
And then
I start thinking a bit about sort of quality and audio and things like that. If somebody submits a video and Lord of the Rings is playing on the background, I can't license that, so I have to think, can I mask out that TV? If somebody says, I've got a great video that I made and it's set to is it set to a Beatles song, I think, good luck with me licensing that. So there's a lot of technical stuff that goes into that. But I do watch every video and all the way through, and there's definitely lots of times where I think, this whole video on its own I can't just put it in the reel, unedited. But there's a little chunk of it that's just something really special there, and with the right context or the right little sound effect or something, it can be in there. So there really isn't any rhyme or reason to each video other than the length of what I'm willing to put in there. But I do take care when I'm going through each year to make sure that there's a real breadth of different types of videos, because as much as the little quick sort of accidental cat falling in a bathtub kind of videos, as much as those are funny, it would be exhausting if it was only that for some
time.
And it would also not feel like people really kind of got their money's worth to see something that was curated for them. And so I want to make sure that there's animated pieces and music videos, little mini documentaries, and different things that are touching as well as funny and informative. I really want people to come away from it going, were those really all cat videos? Because some of the videos, the only thing they have in common is a cat.
Yeah, for
Other
sure.
Than that, they're functionally and artistically completely different. And that's the fun of it for me, is making sure that every year has a real ebb and flow and to feel really curated. So makes it worth it.
For sure. So I want to be careful about spoilers, which we've been pretty carefully avoiding. But I just want to hit one or two quick specifics, just because it might also give another sense about how you put this together, or go back to the beginning of our conversation with structure. But I noticed here and there, at least one case in particular, there's kind of recurring elements, like the guy that I came to think of as music guy.
Ian Ray. I just love him and his little bits.
Okay.
And I couldn't decide which ones to put in, and it was actually my wife suggested. She goes, well, maybe you can put in a few of them and just spread them out. And then I use them as like little kind of codas,
Yeah.
Kind of throughout it. And I've done that in the past with other musical accompaniments. And I think of it kind of like an old school, like a piano player playing next to a silent film, you know, just playing you between sections and things like that. So that's a way for me to have my cake and eat it too.
That's great.
If I put them all together, it would be too much. But if I spread them out, I get to show a bunch of different kinds of it.
Cool. Well, we're sort of nearing the end of our time, Will, but let me just ask this. Probably a rhetorical question, but is there such a thing as a quintessential cat video? And if so, what is it?
I mean, I would say there is a quintessential cat video in the way that 99% of people, if you ask them to describe a cat video, quote unquote, they would describe something that, and there's one on YouTube, which I think is perfect. It's called My Crazy Cat Max. It's from probably 10 years ago. And it's a woman and she's just filming her cat through a little cardboard tube that holds soda cans, and her cat jumps and knocks her camera off, and then when she writes herself, the cat is wearing the tube. The cat jumped through the tube, and now it's holding, wearing it like a vest. You couldn't plan that if you tried.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any sense to it or rhyme or reason, but it's hilarious, and it would only happen with a cat. So that to me is a quintessential cat video, something silly and surprising that is only a cat could do.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty of similar things, or at least a huge range of cat videos, a cat video fest. So again, we've been speaking of Will Braden. He curates all these. And by the way, one quick question. Can videos repeat from one year to the next, or is it all fresh from each year?
Generally, it's all new each year. Once in a while, I'll have like a quick section of like a classic montage from years past. But no, every year is different because some people come, you know, every year. Some, I have people that have been to the real, you know, 6-7 years in a row, and so I want them to see different things each time.
Yeah.
One more thing I want to mention before we go is on Sunday, the Sunday show at the Tampa Theater, my old friend Chris Poole, Catman Chris.
Oh, great.
And he is the best, Cole and Marmalade and Catman Chris on YouTube and on socials. And he'll be there. And he is maybe just like one of the best old school content creators for cat stuff. And he now rescues cats as well. And has been doing it for years and years and years, and is the nice guy. So
for sure,
to meet him is almost worth the price of admission.
That sounds great. Yeah, of course, he's not surprised. He's been a guest on the show in the past, and he's fantastic.
Of course. Yeah.
So, Will, thank you so much. So this is Will Braden. It's Cat Video Fest, catvideofest.com to find out more. If you have a video that you might want to submit, they can give you the info on that. And again, it's screening at the Tampa Theater August 23 and then 25, 26, 27. So, Will, thanks again for joining us on Talking Animals and giving us a bunch of fun feline cinematic adventures.
It's been my pleasure.
Thanks a lot. In a moment, I'll speak with Jen Heckner of Dog Moms of Tampa Bay about the next canine-friendly event they're supporting, the Pups and Plants Workshop, happening this Saturday, August 24th. We'll also hear more about Dog Moms of Tampa Bay itself in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WNF. Right now, though, I'm going to step into the comedy corner with something from a longtime Talking Animals fave, Brian Regan. This is a piece called Doctors and Veterinarians by Brian Regan on today's comedy corner on Talking Animals on WNF.
My doctor looked at me and said, Brian, you are way too sedentary. So I vowed in that moment to get a dictionary. But I haven't gotten around to it, you know, just been laying around a house. Or is it lying around a house? Doctors specialize, right? Last month, I went to an ear, nose, and throat doctor. Last week, I went to an arch of the foot, small of the back, nape of the neck doctor. I have fallen arches, my small's too big, and I have a trick nape. It's weird. In the human world, there's a doctor for every body part, but in the animal world, a veterinarian takes care of all animals and all their parts? It's got to be the hardest job in the world. Where are the bighorn sheep knee doctors? The wildebeest gastroenterologists? The giraffe throat and throat doctors?
That was Brian Regan, today's Comedy Corner, with a piece called Doctors and Veterinarians, taken from his Netflix special, On the Rocks. Now it's time to speak with Jen Heckner of Dog Moms of Tampa Bay about their cool group and about their forthcoming event in St. Pete, the Pups and Plants Workshop. So here's Jen Heckner back on Talking Animals on Dead Band. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals. So we did talk a couple of years ago, but still I think we'd be remiss if we didn't address a few basics about Dog Moms of Tampa Bay first, like when the group was formed and why.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are based in the Tampa Bay area and founded in 2021, so on year three, and it is a volunteer-run 501c3 nonprofit that we host events all around Tampa Bay for dogs and their humans at local dog-friendly places. Basically, our goal is to kind of do good while having fun, you know, connect the fellow dog-loving people in our community, giving back to rescues and fundraising for them, and then also helping support and push the shop local for small businesses in our community as well.
That's great. So what's involved in joining? If someone was listening and said, hey, maybe I'm a potential dog mom, what would be involved in taking the next step for them?
So everyone is welcome. Dog moms, dog dads, everyone is welcome in our group. We have all of our events posted on our website or on our Facebook group at the Dog Moms of Tampa Bay. So you can see what we've got all upcoming. Some of them are require registration and some are just free for everyone to attend. So check us out on our socials.
And what kind of responsibilities are there if you are a dog mom or a dog dad? I'm guessing there's no heavy lifting, but are you just sort of helping participate or support certain fundraising events, or are there other tasks as well?
Nope, just coming to meet fellow like-minded dog parents in our community, and then really just kind of supporting and championing that dog-friendly community and those businesses, whether it's a fundraising event like the one that we're about to talk about or just a meetup. There's many different ways that you can get involved with our organization.
Cool. So before we get into the specifics of your next event, the Pups and Plants Workshop, can you give me an example, one or two maybe examples of some recent events, just to kind of get a better sense of the breadth of kind of the things that you guys do and support?
Absolutely. So some of our bigger events on an annual basis, we do a big holiday market in December where we have over 100 local dog-related vendors come out, and that's for everyone to come out and shop local and support local. Some of our other events are meetups where we just meet at a dog park or a local dog bar and just kind of bring everyone out. We have goodie bags for those who come. Those are typically free to attend. We've been doing pack walks where we bring in local trainers in the Tampa Bay area to kind of come along and give you tips and tricks on things with your dog. Other things we've done in the past, we've done a CPR workshop with specific to dogs. So all kinds of different things that you can find.
That's great. All right, so let's talk more specifically now about Pups and Plants Workshop. Give us the lowdown, if you'll tell me kind of what we'll be discussing in this workshop, for example.
Yeah, we're really excited about this one. We're partnering with Wild Roots. It's a plant store in St. Pete. And in this workshop, we're going to have, it's instructor-led, someone teach about pet-safe plants and answer all the burning pet plant questions while they walk us through kind of fundamentals of house plant care. And then at the end of that, we'll be building a pet-friendly plant arrangement that folks can take home. So we'll be going through that. They'll teach us, you know, choosing the right plants for your lighting situation, how to keep them alive, and then how to treat them if you have pets. So all sorts of informational that you'll be taking home with that too.
That sounds great. So again, that's this Saturday, August 24th, from I think 10:30 a.m. to noon, I believe I saw. And that's at Wild Roots in St. Pete. So I assume this is one of those we would need to go to the Dog Moms website and either sign up or register somehow.
Yes, we do have a Facebook event, but also on our website is a link for registration for that. And 25% of the ticket fees for this event are being donated to Pet Pal Animal Shelter.
Oh, great.
So come have fun and give back as well.
And that's typically how a lot of these things do work, that at least have a fee involved, is a portion does go to a local rescue or charity of some kind.
Yes.
That's great. Cool. Well, this sounds really good, and I didn't know you could be a dog dad, so that's good to know. So
yes, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, that's a little broader thing than I thought based on the name. I don't think we covered that last time, so I've already learned some key things today, Jen, so thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Coming up on WNF, it's The Conversation, the great show hosted by Mario Nunez and Joe Kane Carter. After that, we shift back to music programming with Jim Bannon, holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Doug Renk, who I believe is in today for Nancy C, hosting the Wednesday Traffic Jam from 3 to 6 p.m., at which point our terrific Wednesday night block of Latin music kicks in. We'll be back next Wednesday with another edition of Talking Animals. And again, if you have a chance to slip a couple bucks into the Talking Animals kitty there at WMNF.org and just go to donate. And then the drop-down menu, TLA, Talking Animals, just gives a head start on our gigantic fundraising goal coming right up. We're 2 weeks away from our fund drive. So I think that's mostly it for now. I invite you to visit TalkingAnimals.net, where our audio archives of every show we've ever done are presented there on Apple Podcasts and other podcast platforms too. And our social media link pages are links there. You can also subscribe to our newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. So, I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Wiki Watching, and beyond. Conversation coming up shortly after NPR News headlines. And then back to music with Jim Bannon and Doug Rankin for Nancy C today. We'll see you next Wednesday on Talking Animals on WMNF. Thanks.